This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Later today, amid the results of today's Wisconsin primary, exit polls will give analysts information about which kinds of voters supported which candidates and why. Our guest Charles Lewis reminds us that it's at least as important to look at the quarterly reports of the Federal Elections Commission to find out which contributors support which candidate, and then to ask why. Charles Lewis is the founder and executive director of the Center for Public Integrity and the author of a book that documents political donations in presidential election years. The new one is The Buying of the President 2004. Later in the program, a new study drew a link between antibiotics and breast cancer, but it also raised as many questions as it answered. We'll find out what we know and what we don't. But first, the role of money in presidential elections. If you have questions about who's supporting who, give us a call. We'd be especially interested in hearing from those of you who've made a contribution or have been asked to. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Charles Lewis is here with us in Studio 3A, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Well, thanks for having me.
In your book, you write about the importance of the wealth primary, which is the event that's held before the election year ever begins. The single most salient fact about the White House election process, you write, a discovery first made by Republican political fundraising consultant Stan Huckabee, is that in every presidential cycle since 1976, the candidate who's raised the most money at the end of the year preceding the election and has been eligible for federal matching funds has become the party's nominee for the general election, except this year.
Well, this year we have three candidates, Kerry, Dean, and Bush, who opted out of the system, who were not eligible for matching funds because for various reasons they decided to keep raising money or they wanted to give their own money in the case of Kerry. And so, unfortunately, that really fascinating fact will be a quarter century truth that will fade in over time. But it is interesting. And, you know, a lot of the fixation by the media of Dean throughout the year, if you think about it, what else does the media have to cover in the year before the election? There are no elections. There are no caucuses or primaries. And so the momentum that we always hear about is partly the polls, but the polls are partly from the media coverage, and the media coverage is partly from the money. It's a little bit of a cat chasing its tail about what starts when and everything, but the money is watched very closely, and the political reporters watch to see who's gathering steam fast. And back in 99, you had five big Republican presidential candidates, two former cabinet officials and a former vice president, drop out in August before the Iowa caucuses months later because all the air was sucked out of the room by George W. Bush, who had raised $37 million in something like 3 months, which had never been seen before in American politics. And all of them then were out of money and out of momentum, and the media looked at them as kind of yesterday's news, and they all, and so the voters in Iowa never got to even cast a vote for them.
This has obviously become a fact in American politics, but one thing that was supposed to change this year was the enactment of the McCain-Feingold legislation that at least limited some kinds of campaign contributions, though it doubled other kinds.
Well, exactly. The $1,000 limit, which comes from 0.1% of the American people, 96% don't give a penny to any politician. You know, those now it's $2,000, and so that was the price of McCain-Feingold getting passed. But the fact is, it's a little bit of apples and oranges. The presidential campaign system itself is mostly direct contributions to the candidates.
What we came to call hard money.
Hard money, and that law, new law, did not really address that. It was really soft money, the money to the parties, and it was also some other issues, such as issue ads that can be run and other subjects. Not that it doesn't have some impact on the campaign, but the one thing we have seen is how broken the presidential campaign system is, the matching fund system. When the top three candidates opt out of it, that's not a good sign. I think something like 10 or 15% of the American people do the checkoff now for $3, and they barely have enough money to give out matching funds for those who choose to do it. And clearly that whole system is in substantial disarray. But when it comes to needing cash and needing a lot of it, 20 to 30 million to be a serious candidate the year before the election, that reality has not changed regardless of McCain-Feingold.
One thing that is available, though, is the names of everybody who contributes to the presidential campaigns, and that is useful information, one of the things you base this book on. And on that basis, what do you conclude, and since there's a Democratic primary today in Wisconsin, what do you conclude about who is supporting which candidate? And we'll begin by the person who's was that front runner and sort of revolutionized fundraising in a way, at least this time around, and that's Howard Dean.
Well, yeah, Dean clearly has used the internet in a way never before seen in American politics, where you can raise $800,000 to $1 million in a single day, small donations. So it has changed things a bit, and we're going to, I think people will be studying how he has done that for years to come. From being from Vermont, 11 years as a governor, $400 limits on contributions. Mm-hmm. This is not, despite raising $41 million last year, not a robustly funded politician over the years, partly because of being from Vermont. His top 10 career patrons, there's only one left that is from Vermont. There are a lot of folks from out-of-towners, I guess they'd say, up there. You know, there are employees who work at Time Warner and University of California and Microsoft and IBM and Citigroup and other kinds of places that have congregated around Dean. Dean did do things for special interests when he was governor, the utility industry there. His deputy chief of staff went and became the chief lobbyist for those companies when they were deregulated. And there are things in our book we talk about Dean. But, you know, his top career patron, I think, has given something like $70,000, which is, you know, a fraction of a fellow like Kerry or certainly Bush. And so in terms of sheer dimension, it's not on the same level, really.
Well, then let's go to Senator Kerry. And obviously,
sure.
Howard Dean says, on the one hand, he's beholden to special interests. And, of course, Senator Kerry says, absolutely not. But what does the money
right.
say?
Well, they're all beholden to special. Anyone who raises millions, even if they use the internet, has some special interest money. It's just simply inconceivable that you would just have wonderful folks who believe in you and that no one is doing it for any other reason. I mean, it defies credulity. But Kerry, you know, is a creature of Washington, has been in Washington for 20-plus years. He has raised roughly $60 million. He's on the Commerce and Finance Committees, very close to certain industries, banking, telecommunications. His top contributor is Mintz Levin. His brother's law firm in Boston represents telecommunication interests. He has done a number of favors for those clients, letters to the Federal Communication Commission, speeches, legislation, which we document at great length. He has taken a lot of lobbying money from registered lobbyists, which had a report that came out in the last couple of weeks. And he is well acquainted with special interests. He has also, he would claim, urged that there be campaign finance reform and, you know, has not taken political action committee money known as PAC money, which is also true. And it's a kind of a mixed record. He has, I guess you'd say, talk the talk but not walk the walk, because he can. As a politician, you have to raise millions of dollars. You have to. You don't get that from backyard barbecues and bake sales, and he didn't. and you know, and that's the reality. And
one of the things that I found fascinating about the book is the way that you document any number of politicians. And again, it's both parties that say, you know, I have to spend so much of my time making phone calls to strangers and rattling the tin cup.
Right. No, that we do talk about that. There's a demeaning, dehumanizing element here. John Edwards had to go to 175 fundraising events in 3 months, and he was the most successful first quarter 2003 candidate. John Kerry was in the hospital for his prostate cancer. He still had the catheter in, and he's emailing his donors saying, "Don't worry, I'm okay, and I'll be out there soon." You know,
and Bob Graham after his bypass surgery.
Yeah, bypass surgery with Graham. And so that you're always watching the checks rolling in, knowing that the media is going to notice that. And if suddenly you don't have any more money, then people think your candidacy is dead. You remember that before Gore said he wasn't running, he couldn't pay the rent and his staff. it's always a bad sign. And Quayle had problems years ago. One of the first signs you could see he was having problems is no one was contributing money inside the party nationwide. And And so it's a great canary in the mine shaft about the health of it. I mean, I can see why political reporters use the money, but the other problem there is we discount anyone who doesn't have 20 or 30 million. Their ideas are not terribly important to us, or they don't get covered quite as closely. There's a dynamic here, which maybe it has to be that way, but you do wonder. I do often wonder about Abraham Lincoln and Harry Truman, and would they go around with a tin cup for 2 full years and hundreds of events and frozen smile type situations, and how much of that would they put up with? Maybe they put up a lot with a lot. Lincoln had the Civil War, for God's sake. Maybe I'm overly romanticizing, but it is an ordeal, I think.
Our telephone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is totn@npr.org. Our guest is Charles Lewis, the author of The Buying of the President, 2004. And let's go to Larry, who's with us from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Hey, how are you?
Okay.
Just wanted to make a quick comment that of the major viable candidates who are out there, there's only one at this point who's competing up in Wisconsin who has stayed within the parameters of the financial stuff, hasn't chosen to go beyond it. It's not really funded by the people who are in the communication industry, whether it's Bush with connections with FCC or Kerry with his, and he just talked about the types of things that Kerry was involved with, dealing with cable vision and everything else, that John Edwards basically is the only major viable person out there who has gotten some money from special interests, primarily gets seed money to get started through the trial lawyers, but most of his money that he's raised and getting matched from federal as we go forward has been from small donors.
Charles Lewis, we have neglected John Edwards up till now. Where right. is he getting his? Is it trial lawyers?
Well, it is substantially trial lawyers. 22 of his top 25 career patrons are from trial lawyers. And, of course, that's what he used to do as a successful trial lawyer. His top contributor is Stephen Bing, who has a company called Shangri-La Entertainment. Bing gave $7 million to the Democratic Party in the last 10 years, one of the biggest donors to the party, and gave $907,000 to a freshman senator named John Edwards, which is a little bit unusual. That's a lot of money. Now, that's not a single contribution. That's to some of these accounts they have, leadership PACs, those kinds of things. But
I was going to say, how does one person, develop that much money? I mean, there are restrictions, right?
Well, there are, but a lot of these candidates have other committees or accounts. In Edwards' case, he has the New American Optimist, and he has federal and non-federal accounts, and we added up all that money because it's all about him and what he's about. And my point is, everyone uses the phrase special interest, and depends where you stand depends on where you sit. And some people think trial lawyer money is a good thing. Some think it's a bad thing. Same with telecom money. Same with oil and gas money. The point of the Buying of the President 2004 is to know the scorecard. You can't tell the players without a scorecard. This is the scorecard, and people can make their own value judgments. Has Edwards been involved with special interests? The answer is yes.
Larry, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's a quick email question. I'd like to know, writes Richard Peel from Westmont, New Jersey, what happens to the funds that have been raised when a candidate drops out of the presidential race? For example, all the Democrats that have fallen by the wayside, when they announce that they're stepping down the day after a primary, surely there's a balance of funds left over?
Well, that's right, although most of them are not only out of gas, they're out of cash. And it's very rare that...
Two things are closely related.
Yeah, usually when they drop out, it's because they've hit rock bottom, so to speak. But it's true, a presidential campaign account, that money can be transferred. I believe it can be transferred. Don't hold me to this, though. I think it's to the party or to another Senate account. It depends on the politician and the state, I think. There are strict rules about this, and the House and Senate members have different rules about their own accounts. And this is tricky, but yes, the money can be used for non-personal purposes, theoretically. I mean, don't get me started. But no, generally it can be used for other political purposes. Usually they divvy it up. Look at Torricelli, the disgraced senator who has now been giving money for issue ads in Iowa recently from his old Senate account.
We're speaking with Charles Lewis of the Center for Public Integrity. When we come back from a short break, we'll talk with a major contributor to the Republican Party and take more of your calls. Our number is 800-989-8255. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the role of money in presidential elections. Our guest is Charles Lewis, Executive Director of the Center for Public Integrity, author of The Buying of the President 2004. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255 or send us an email, totn@npr.org. And with us now on the line from his office in Nashville, Tennessee, is Ted Welch, a longtime contributor to the Republican Party. In the late 70s, Mr. Welch was finance chair of the Republican National Committee. He chaired the presidential campaigns of former Tennessee Senators Lamar Alexander and Howard Baker. In this race thus far, he's raised $150,000 for President Bush's reelection. And good to have you on the program.
It's good to be here. Thank you, Neil.
Why do you give money to Republican candidates?
Well, because I believe when a person gets in position to do so, they ought to give. If they've profited from the economic system that we have in this country that enables people to become somebody regardless of their background and their status growing up as a child. So I think once you get in position to support the system through time and through money, that you ought to do so, because I believe we have the greatest economic and political system in the entire world, probably the history of the world.
Is this entirely altruistic? Do you expect anything in return?
I never have so far. One day I might want something, but I can't imagine when it would be or what it would be.
Now, when you give this kind of money, though, to candidates, if you give them a phone call, do you expect them to answer?
Well, you hope, the most you can hope for is to gain their ear, to get them to listen to whatever's on your mind that regarding the direction that they need to be going on particular issues.
Now, you own several office buildings and retail stores there in Tennessee. What issues are important to you that you might call that politician up?
Well, I've raised Lamar Alexander's money for everything he's run for since 1974.
You bought those plaid shirts?
I helped buy them. And if you ask him what I have ever asked him for, I think he'd be hard-pressed to come up with anything.
Nevertheless, there's a long list of people who give money to presidential campaigns who later go on to become cabinet officers, ambassadors to various places. At times, there can be a perception of a quid pro quo.
There can be, and I've had from the national level, I've been approached about whether I would have interest in being a cabinet member or whether I would have interest in being an ambassador. And my answer has always been that I think you ought not to make a life out of public service. And I took out 3 years of my life to serve as the chief operating officer for the state of Tennessee, and that I felt I had done my part. Hmm. That's the way the system was envisioned at the outset.
Now, how do you...
professional.
We're going to talk with Charles Lewis about the Bush fundraising effort, which has been remarkable in several respects. You are, as I understand it, are you a pioneer or are you a ranger?
I'm a pioneer, which is halfway, I'm halfway between pioneer and ranger.
So a pioneer and a half.
Yes.
Okay. How do you go about raising $150,000?
Well, I did it simply for an event, the president coming to Nashville for a reception in the late afternoon, and people were very willing to give $2,000 to attend, and most would have probably given more had there not been a limit of $2,000 per person.
And so you add up all those $2,000 contributions, and they come marked with your name on it.
That's correct.
Okay. Ted Welch, thanks very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome.
Ted Welch is owner of Ted Welch Investments and a major contributor, as you just heard, to President Bush's reelection campaign, and he was with us from his office in Nashville. And let's get another caller on the line, and this is Mark, and Mark is with us from Boise, Idaho.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
First-time caller. I guess you could say that I'm the antithesis of Mr. Welch in that... I did give a small amount to Howard Dean, $100, not because I thought he was great, but because he appeared to be the most viable candidate to defeat Dr. President Bush at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And now, since things have changed, I plan to contribute to Kerry, and I know you know 20 other people that are going to do the same, and they'll be first-time donors. And we do not expect anything in return. I don't even want a phone call. I don't want a bumper sticker. I just want to make my voice heard. I live in Idaho, where because of the way of the Electoral College, my vote will not count because the state is so conservative. And this is a way for me to voice my strong feeling.
Do you think your $100 is going to make a difference?
Well, it didn't make a difference because I donated to Howard Dean, and he's not going anywhere. But when I donate $100, yes, I think it will, because in aggregate, over you know the 20 people I know who will be first-time donors this time, we will contribute an aggregate of $4,000.
Did you give over the internet, by the way?
Yes, over the internet.
Huh, that's interesting.
And, I think that the take-home message is people like myself of modest income are now participating in the process. My mother sent the DNC $25 because she felt that she had to participate in the process. She had never given any money. And I think that the Republican Party is going to see that in the next 8 months that the Democratic voters can generate huge amounts of money through small donors. And I think we're reacting to the kind of fat cat $2,500 a plate dinners that we see going on a daily basis, and we're never going to be invited to those events, but we can participate, and there's a hell of a lot more people that can donate $25 to $100 than can donate $2,500.
Okay, Mark.
And our voices will be heard, and my vote may not count when I vote in the general election, but my money will count.
Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Charles Lewis, I guess we saw two ends of the spectrum there. We'll be talking more about Internet fundraising revolution in just a minute. But let's not ignore what the president has done. He has outraised, I think, all of the Democratic candidates put together.
Well, he has. I mean, these numbers, $131 million the year before the election, $600,000 a day. In 99, he raised $230,000 a day to Gore's $84,000 a day. These numbers are on some other planet. We have never, ever seen numbers like this. And the Pioneer System is a revolutionary way to bundle money, basically. Get a number of executives from a single company to all contribute on the same day. And it used to be, up until 2000, no politician in America, either party, Clinton, Dole, Gore, could find more than 19,000 people to write the maximum check of that time,
$1,000. Yeah.
Bush found 58,000 back then in 99, 2000. I don't know how many he has found this time, but these checks are numbered, and each industry gets credit. And when you read the court materials from the Supreme Court case, McCain-Feingold, you actually read where emails and letters where they want to make sure the president knows that they're giving the money. And you got to wonder, what is this thing about credit? What's going on here? Why do they need credit? And, I think it's pretty clear that there is a close association. Yes, there is a drive for access, and yes, there is influence that occurs. And Mr. Welch, who I've interviewed in mm-hmm. past years, essentially acknowledged that there is access. And the thing that I always love is everyone has access, but no one has influence, which is illogical on its face. But
if you're on the other end of the equation, if you're the head of Acme Industries, aren't you afraid that you better give because Mr. Smith down the road is giving and he's in the same business you are, so you want as much access or influence or whatever as he's got?
Well, there is that dimension, the competitive dimension. Am I the only one in the industry who's not doing it?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is, to be honest, the extortive dimension. A lot of donors say they feel like they have to give almost, like if they don't give, they'll be shut out in the cold, and which is a variation on the competitive thing.
Right. But on a variation of the competitive thing, doesn't the head of ACME make sure that he gives to that party, but the other party too, because they might win?
Right, he does. Although sometimes the political parties will say, no, you can't give to the other party. You only give to us. And it depends on the location in America, what region you're talking about, the personalities involved. The bottom line is there is a weird dynamic here, and it varies from donor to donor. But in many cases, these are powerful economic interests, whether they're business or labor, and they want something in return and frequently get it. That's the bottom line here, as far as I'm concerned.
As we've mentioned, Howard Dean's use of the Internet as a fundraising device has been one of the most talked about activities this year. A recent study from the Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet says a new community of Internet-oriented people who are making political contributions online may change the way politics is practiced in this country. Joining us now from his office in Washington is Michael Kornfield, Research Director at the George Washington University's Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet. He was one of the authors of that study, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Who are these people who are making political donations online? I guess we heard from one of them just a few minutes ago.
Yes, you did, and it's important to note that he said that he wasn't sticking with Howard Dean much longer, and what we found was that lots of the people are not the traditional hardcore do-or-die supporters, but everyday civic activists or political activists, the Roper Company calls influentials. The population of the online givers of America, which is about 7% of the U.S. adult population, looks very much like the people who are not necessarily the leaders or the executives, but the networkers, which makes sense when you think about it because they love the Internet.
And what do they expect from this contribution?
Well, I think they expect influence, too. I think the $100 donation doesn't have the smoking gun impact of a $150,000 bundled donation. On the other hand, $150,000 in the context of $131 million isn't a lot of money. And $100 given at the right time with the right visibility can change the race. Howard Dean changed the race. He made John Kerry and John Edwards different candidates. And so that $100 was well spent, even though Howard Dean is not going to get the nomination.
Howard Dean and his Internet fundraising have been given great credit for bringing all kinds of new people into the process and expanding this potential Democratic Party email base for support. Is this a good thing?
Oh, I think it's absolutely a good thing. It's important to note that the Republicans are also using email to raise money, and that the Republicans, I'm sure Mr. Lewis would agree, have been using direct mail for decades to raise money in small donations in addition to large donations. But the Internet makes it so easy and so fast, and you can listen to someone on Talk of the Nation who has a candidate or a cause she's supporting, and you like that, and you want to respond, and you're sitting in front of your computer, and thanks to Google now, you don't have to remember the exact website address. You can just type in the name of the person or the organization and click. There's your donation.
Now, you've also said that the Bush-Cheney reelection campaign has done the best job of disclosing where their money comes from. Tell us a little bit more about that.
The Bush-Cheney campaign is the only one that has a searchable database on its own website where you could go and look and look for contributors, not just contributors who have to file with the FEC above $200, but everybody who gives money to Bush-Cheney is put into that database. All of the Rangers and Pioneers, all 416 of them as of today, are listed there. So it's a great a journalistic and public resource. And what it does politically is enable the Bush-Cheney campaign to claim, hey, we're not operating in the dark. We put all of our donors online so that anybody can see who's giving to us. What about the Democrats? And amazingly to me, the Democrats aren't doing this.
At least not yet.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying at least not yet.
No, Dean and Kerry were shamed into releasing lists of their top fundraisers and bundlers. I think a couple other candidates were as well, but it's not on their Internet sites.
Michael Kornfield, thanks very much.
Thank you.
Michael Kornfield, Research Director at George Washington University's Institute for Politics, Democracy, and the Internet. He was with us from his office in Washington. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Charles Lewis is still with us. Let's get another phone call in. This is Joe, who's with us from Athens, Ohio.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Mr. Lewis, I'd like to know more about the, I think it's called a 537 PAC that was funded like for over $660,000 by the other major Democratic candidates in order to derail Dean. He was the front runner, and now you've even written him off, even though he's got the second highest number of delegates. At least we'll see how Wisconsin shakes down.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about these this kind of PAC.
Yeah, it's actually technically it's an IRS number. It's 527. These are political organizations that can be active politically with issue ads and those kinds of things. It's absolutely true that Dean was figuratively speaking mugged in Iowa with an ad. A group called Americans for Jobs got together 600 plus thousand. They had donors to Gephardt and Kerry who put this money together, and they ran ads, including a very inflammatory ad that had Osama bin Laden's picture there in the context of Howard Dean relating to foreign policy. And the frustrating thing about that ad is, in addition to whatever one thinks of using Osama bin Laden in political ads, is the fact that we didn't know, the public didn't know, the media did not know who exactly funded this ad until after the Iowa caucuses. The disclosure regulations are not obviously as good as they ought to be, and the public just recently found this out in the last week or two. And I mentioned Senator Torricelli; he was one of the donors.
The former senator from New Jersey
who had to was censured by the Senate. Had $50,000 in leftover campaign money, and he put it into this sort of secret, murky organization that no longer exists today, by the way. And there is this this problem with these organizations that can be created out of almost thin air, can exist for a few weeks, and by the time the media and the public catch up, they're gone, and the event is gone, the primary or caucus in this instance. And in that sense, Dean was a victim, just as John McCain was a victim
In South Carolina. 2000,
yeah, yes. South Carolina and elsewhere back in 2000. So these there's now 20,000 of these organizations. Not all of those are active. Really more like 500 are active. On our website, publicintegrity.org, you can enter any group that you think is one of these and see who's behind them. The good news is we know eventually we can find out who funds them. The problem is you don't always know.
Joe, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
We just have about a minute left, and Peggy Kenny in Palo Alto reminds me to ask our guest outline where Dennis Kucinich and Al Sharpton are getting their funds, such as they are. She says, I think you'll find an interesting contrast just between those two candidates. And again, there's very little time left.
Sure. Kucinich is the quintessential stereotypical Democratic candidate. Of his support, nine are unions and one is the trial lawyers, the stereotypical supporters of the Democratic Party. There's not a single corporate donation in his top 10. His numbers are relatively low or even arguably anemic. They're 40 or 50,000 is his top patron.
Mm-hmm.
Sharpton, of course, has never held elective office, and his numbers are at around 20 or 30,000. And there are folks like Don King Productions, and there's some churches, and there are a few others, but not very much money, not a lot of money. From the kinds of places these other candidates have gotten theirs.
Charles Lewis, Executive Director of the Center for Public Integrity. He's the author of the newly published Buying of the President 2004. Thanks very much for being
Thank
with
you.
Us today. Coming back from the break, we'll be talking about a new study linking antibiotics and breast cancer. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.